course, the crowd wants Reed to go for it. Wouldn't be surprised if he did on 4th-and-1.
So, anyways, with that, time, George.
Welcome to 4th-and-1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs for yet another victory edition. 10 times in 11 games, Nick. We've had victory editions of Ye Olde Podcast here. Probably a little bit closer than folks would have hoped at the end after, the Chiefs got out to a 17-0 lead, end up hanging on for a 27-24 win. But overall, hey, look, you go on the road, you beat a good Tampa Bay team with a good defense, and, especially the way that they started that game, you got to be fairly happy coming home with the W, right?
I mean, you're glad that they're able to get on there with a win, especially how things are going in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, there's a lot to work on. There's a lot that needs to be done if they want to be able to pull games like that out in January when offenses are at their peak. So, some of those things they left on the field, they won't be able to leave on the field against Pittsburgh if they face them at some point, and a couple other teams. So, I mean, look, they got the win. That's all that matters. Offense did well early on, but there's a lot of concern with that front four and the defensive line. And there's a lot of concern with offensive line, especially on the interior. And those are the things that are going to have to be figured out. And then there's a little issue at safety right now. Until Thornhill can get healthy, I mean, they don't have another guy right now that can really give them the range they need to go along with Matthew, to where they can move Matthew all over the field. So if you don't have those things, I mean, that's the Chiefs and Spagnuolo, they blitzed a lot today to create pressure. And the front four couldn't do it by itself on a regular basis. So when you do that, you give up checkdowns over the middle. You give up a lot over the middle that Brady can move the football down the field. So, I mean, it's by the time they got to that point in the fourth quarter, they were used to their blitz and the timing of their blitz. So they were able to move it and work it down the field.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about the pass rush at length down the road, but I want to start with the offense here. And look, I really thought the game, first of all, the game changed when the offensive line gave up all the pressure and Mahomes ended up getting sacked and fumbling, because that gave Tampa Bay a toehold. But I really thought that Mecole Hardman's drop on what probably should have been a touchdown, I feel like if the Chiefs get the touchdown at that point in the game, it's lights out. I think Tampa Bay wilts at that point. They know that they have no chance. And instead, they were able to force a punt. And then the Chiefs, the defense kept Tampa Bay in the game and gave Tom Brady and the offense a chance to come back. Did you see it that way? Or was there, like I said, fumble and McColl's drop, I thought that's what allowed Tampa to stick around.
Yeah, I mean, those were the two plays, a fumble in the red zone, and then, like you said, Mecole Hardman's pass that some people say that Mahomes didn't put it spot on, but I'm going to be honest, there's a lot of times where I watch Mecole not exactly get the right depth on a route and some other things that, Mahomes is anticipating a certain spot where he's going to place it at, and Mecole is not exactly at that exact spot. They're still not in the same chemistry almost 2 years later, and that's,
Well, so. Besides that, on that play, though, there's no one within 10 yards of him. And I've always been told by receivers, if you can get both hands on it, you should catch it. So, I mean, could the throw have been better? Probably. Should McColl have still caught it and scored? Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, do Tyreek and Travis drop that? No. Does Sammy Watkins, when a reason sync with the offense, drop that? No. They catch it and they go score. I mean, that's just kind of the difference between those three guys as receivers and where McColl is at in his career. So, I mean, yeah, no, that would have been the dagger touchdown there. Mahomes would have been over 500 yards passing for the first time in his career, and the Chiefs would have blown that open, and the Bucs, like you said, would have kind of started mentally shutting down. I mean, Brady would have still tried to fight back and get him back to some regard, but, I mean, that was a play that could have ended that football game at that time.
Right, and speaking of, look, we saw why from week one of the season teams have played deep safeties and challenged the Chiefs to beat them, death by a thousand cut style, by forcing them to drive the ball. That's what we've seen most of the season, and I know it's frustrated people because they're like, where's the deep ball? Why isn't Patrick throwing it deep? Well, that's generally been why, because they're playing that cover two. Were you as surprised as I was that Tampa Bay was like, nah, we can, even though we've got a bit of a depleted secondary, we feel comfortable playing one-on-one with Tyreek Hill in the first quarter?
I think the Bucks thought the Chiefs were going to hold on to the football longer early on and that they weren't going to do the quick passing game to get in sync and get in rhythm. And I think they kind of underestimated what Sammy Watkins does to that offense and kind of the respect you have to show in some regards and some of the way it's going to stretch your coverage in certain spots. And then I think on top of that, I think they thought they were going to hold on to the football longer to where their pass rush was going to make the difference. I think they thought their front four was going to smack around the Chiefs offensive line the entire game. So that should be kind of an insult to the Chiefs offensive line that the Bucks thought they were going to do that to you for four quarters and that they could play the style that they did. And then when they found out that that wasn't going to work out, then they adjusted to it and they got after that Chiefs offensive line and exposed them a great deal in that game. And that changed the tide from a Chiefs offense perspective.
Right. I mean, look, first quarter, 7 catches, 203 yards, 2 touchdowns for Tyreek Hill. But when they adjusted and they started doing what everybody else or almost everybody else has done this year, which is, you know, play the safeties deep, rotate coverage towards Hill and Kelsey, force Patrick to look elsewhere more often than not, you know, the offense bogged down. I mean, we saw the Patriots have success with it, and the teams that have had some success limiting the Chiefs, the times that they've been able to limit the Chiefs, that's what they did. So full credit to Todd Bowles for figuring that out. Not quite sure why he thought leaving Carlton Davis on an island against Tyreek Hill early was going to be a winning strategy, as if Patrick wouldn't light up. I mean, it's almost Christmas, and that's got to be like Christmas to Patrick Mahomes anytime he sees Ty Hill and one-on-one in man coverage with a single high safety. Like, I mean, you're just – that's just like a kid in a candy store. What? How do they fix the offensive line, though? Because Eric Fisher – you know, he gave up some pressure today. He played great first half of the season. He hasn't been as great the last couple of weeks. Andrew Wiley continues to really struggle on the interior. I mean, what solutions do they have here?
They actually do have some opportunities if they want to take him here in the coming weeks. They're going to have to make a decision about what they want to do at center, if they want to go with Ryder, Kilgore, if they want to try Allegretti at that spot. That's the first thing they're going to have to decide. Second thing they're going to decide is Wiley. At some point, they're going to have to make a decision if they want to put Rankin or Wisniewski in that spot because it's not working out anymore. So, I mean, that's been the reality. You just didn't have Rankin or Wisniewski available to replace into that spot. Now, once they're up to speed, you move one of them to that spot. If you need to move another to left guard and then move Allegretti to center, then you can try that. But that left guard, center, right guard combination, that's what's going to decide how far the Chiefs go. Now, Eric Fisher, in that regard, I saw him hobble a couple times in their last game against the Raiders and kind of just struggle through it in some regards. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's just battling through whatever issues going on for him. That wouldn't surprise me one bit. Schwartz are still not going to have back for a little bit. And at my point, I'm mentally just preparing for potential playoffs to when you're hoping to have him back a week or two in advance of that. And hopefully that back heals up and he just has to kind of, whatever it is, it's either fully healed up or he just kind of grits through it for a Super Bowl run. But you know Rimmers is capable of playing the right tackle, so you have that relief in that regard. That's what it's going to end up being. Like, I mean, that's the reality. Because if the Chiefs had their offensive line set, and especially if you put the Bucks offensive line in front of Mahomes, like, he would have had 500 without any problem or form. And so, I mean, that's really the bigger thing going into the offseason is that the Chiefs are going to have to fix that. They're going to have to, whatever way they want to go about that, they're going to have to fix that offensive line to where that's going to be the difference. If they have to do paper cuts, they can. If they want to do it other ways, they're going to be able to. But that's the next step in evolution to where Clyde Edwards-Helaire becomes the running back he's capable of, and whatever they want to do at that spot in the passing game, that's what's going to have to be fixed in the offseason.
Okay, but for this year, like, you know, if you're gonna move Allegretti around, if you're gonna put Rankin and or Wisniewski in, obviously you don't want to do that for the divisional playoff game or wild card round if they don't get the number one seed. So ideally, how many do you want? 2, 3, 4 games? What would be the magic number? Because they've only got 5 left. So, I mean, if you're gonna make a move there, I would have to imagine you don't want to wait too much longer before you get that in place and give those guys a chance to build some chemistry together, right?
Correct. And this is, in all honesty, this week against Denver is kind of the week you want to try that if you're going to do it. If you're going to start making your moves, you make them against Denver this week, and then that allows them to have the Denver game, allows them to get the Miami game, ideally crossing fingers. Then you get that Saints game, and then you also end up getting the Chargers game. So, I mean, at minimum, you want to do
– Falcons in there too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm off that week, so that's mentally I'm mentally checked out of that one.
I'm not so
that's kind of where you at least want to give it two games. If you can give it an entire month, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And you hope injuries don't happen, and you know, but where Wesniewski's at and how long it's gonna take him to get up to speed, I wouldn't be surprised if it took 3 weeks for him to be ready. And maybe you make those other two moves, or, you know, you kind of figure that out to where you definitely need to make the right guard switch as soon as possible.
Yeah.
That's the one that has to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. He really struggled. Lots of penalties, lots of pressure given up. Allegretti, I think, was the best offensive lineman in against the Buccaneers.
He's been one of the best all year long because he's got this physical style, and with each rep he gets, he becomes better. He's arguably one of their top two offensive linemen. Him and Osimile together would have been fantastic to watch. So it's unfortunate that they didn't get that chance.
All right, hey, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, got to talk about the defense, man, here on 4th and 1.
The Chiefs continue their quest against the AFC West. Ah! Chiefs, Broncos, one of the NFL's most meaningful rivalries.
It's going to be loud, so we got to communicate.
On Sunday Night Football, get Kansas City's most exclusive coverage, interviews, analysis, the best pregame show in town.
Let's go, what? Let's go.
Next Sunday at 5.
Ah! Only on 41 Action News, your home of the world champion, Kansas City Chiefs.
The best seat to all the action. 7th Street Casino. Sunday Sound Off. An interactive sports show like no other. Answer questions. Voice your opinion. Try your hand against our panel of experts. Every Sunday night after the news and football.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, I feel like the two of us combined have generated about as much pressure on opposing quarterbacks as the Chiefs front four the last couple of weeks. And I have watched
for yourself,
the game.
Todd.
I've watched the games from Independence. So I can promise you, I have provided no pressure on any quarterback in Las Vegas or Tampa.
I provide pressure through my tweets.
But
like victory lap buses and things like that.
Right, there you go. No, that Gruden, you can tell Gruden was feeling the pressure on that one. And by the way,
they felt a lot more pressure this week.
Yeah, shout out to Las Vegas for laying an egg against Atlanta. I mean, come on.
I saw a funny photo the other day. It's where it showed the Raider Stadium, and it said the only time the house loses in Vegas. That's fantastic.
Well, and we talked about this after the game, like the Raiders are built for one team. And they had a huge letdown when Patrick Mahomes carved them up late. And, you know, and then you saw what happens when they face a team they're not familiar with and they're not built to go. I mean, they just no-showed against Atlanta. And that's you hate to see it. And by hate to see it, I mean, I didn't mind seeing it at all.
I think some people picked up on that, but I'm glad you went the extra mile to make sure everybody was there with you.
Look, man, sometimes
Todd leaves no podcaster listener behind.
Right. I mean, some people don't get sarcasm. So, but look, the pass rush, we've known all season that they have to blitz to get pressure, right? That's the way it's been. And look, that's been a hallmark historically of Steve Spagnuolo's defenses. He brings a lot of different blitzes. So this wasn't unexpected. This wasn't unusual. I don't think this was cause for alarm the first 6-7 games. What's been alarming is the fact that, I mean, Chris Jones and Frank Clark, along with the rest of the, you know, the defensive line, which has been hurt and in and out of the lineup, but But the guys you're paying the big money to get out to the quarterback have not been doing their job the last couple of weeks. What is the problem with Chris Jones? Is it strictly effort, or is there more to it? Because I'll be honest, I was watching a little bit today. He wasn't double teamed, you know, every snap. Like, there were opportunities. He just isn't winning one-on-one right now.
Now, the first thing I'll say for him, and people won't like it, but I'm going to say it anyways because we have to cover all bases here. That's just what, right. That's just what, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. Being a journalist.
Objectivity.
See, dude, why didn't you help me out sooner, dude? You left me struggling over there, bro.
You get mad when I throw out
me, bro.
You get mad when I throw out $5 words, then you get mad when I don't. So I feel like it's
yeah, but you see me over there just drowning, and you're like, "Hey, you doing all right over there? Hi." all right, I'll get the preserver in a little bit, okay? Just you get a good cardio in real quick.
Did you say you're having trouble, Nick?
No, but I mean, the groin injury, I'm kind of curious how much that's altering him, because sometimes his first step doesn't look as explosive as it did before the injury. So I'm kind of wondering in that regard how much that's impacting him, and if that's where sometimes he's like, hey, you know, these are how many snaps I got to be able to make an impact, and some of the times I'm going to have to be a decoy. And, you know, I mean – you know, is that what fans want and expect for that type of money? No. But I mean, is that kind of the reality sometimes in football whenever people are struggling through some injuries that people just aren't ever going to understand? I mean, you know, you're asking to perform at a high level as an athlete every single snap. So 72 tasks in a day for you. You're asked to be at an elite level and to quote unquote earn your money. I mean, for the rest of us that, you know, I sit at a computer for most of my day, you know? So, I mean, I'm, you know, the amount of impact, if I have a groin injury or, you know, maybe elbow titus, you know, elbow bursitis or something like that, you know, I can,
yeah, I got a shoulder issue. Right.
Yeah. I can muscle through it, but I mean, you know, the other day I will give the story real quick and then we'll get back to where we were. I was jogging down the sidelines at Smithville on Friday night so I could get to the other end zone, to try to get the, only touchdown that I thought I was going to shoot in that game. It ended up being an interception, so it was a wasted jog with a mask on. So, I mean, that was super fun. But I'll be honest, Todd, halfway through it, given that it was like 32, 33, 34 degrees outside, I couldn't feel my legs halfway through the jog. I knew I was moving fast. I could see it, but I couldn't feel it because of how cold it was. So,
are you older than 30?
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
I think I know where the problem is.
Okay.
Yeah. Your youth is over.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. But I'm saying in that story, like, you know, I saved that sprint for that one play, for that one snap, you know. I wasn't going down to the other end unless I knew, all right, they're inside this point, because I knew that the team, their offensive styles, I shot it a couple times. So I was once they hit this marker, then I'll go. But until then, I'm gonna see if they turn it over. See, that's me scouting opponents, Todd, at a high school shooting level. It never stops for me. Never stops. but no, I mean, yeah, with Chris Jones, I mean, that's one. Now the other thing, he, in a scouting report over the years, when I did his scouting report coming out, one of the things I wrote down is he runs hot and cold. There's plays where he's going to dominate and he's going to look like Aaron Donald, be one of the top three defensive tackles in the league. And then there was plays that he took off at Mississippi State. So, I mean, when he had the contract year in front of him, you weren't going to be surprised that you were going to get the best of him, because he's got to earn that money. So now he's earned that money. So what he does this year and next year is going to define him and his career. Was he a player that you had to always kind of keep that money that he had to earn in front of him? Or is he a guy that's a self-motivated self-starter? So, I mean, you know, we'll see how it goes. And I mean, in all honesty, there's a reason why the Chiefs have the contract set the way they do, to where they can dip out after, you know, after next year, they can dip out and move on. I mean, it's not, they gave themselves some protections in that regard.
Yeah. We'll see. Like there's still a lot of season left, there's still the playoffs for him to prove something, but been a little disappointed so far, but look, Frank Clark's not immune from this. I mean, he had one bad penalty, one really just off. I mean, that looked, it reminded me of like like Marty's last year, you know, I mean, that was the kind of penalty you'd see him take on a Monday night game against Denver. It was pointless. It was unnecessary. It seemed like it was born out of frustration. You know, I mean, you and I have both defended Frank Clark a lot in terms of what he does against the run and the edge he brings and the physicality he plays with. But didn't see it tonight in the right ways, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, the two penalties were disappointing. They're frustrating to see, and you hope that that's a one-time deal and that doesn't turn into something. So in that regard, yeah, no, that's something that needs to be corrected and needs to never happen again, especially in a playoff game. Cannot happen in a playoff game. That's where it needs to never happen again, or a tight, close game that decides if you're the number one seed or not. Something like that. But with Frank, he's still able to set the edge, but right now I'm not sure. I mean, no matter how much tape I watch, I'm not 100% sure what it is right now that is keeping him from kind of being able to turn it on at certain times in the game on third downs and certain times like that. Now, I know when I talked to Steve Spagnuolo, when I asked him a question earlier this week, and he talked about, you know, teams, it's a factor of teams when they're getting the ball out quick and when they're doing this and doing that those do factor into it. And I totally get that. But I think for offenses, they honestly just have to focus on where's 95, where's 55. We double those two, nobody else can bring it. And they're either going to have to bring a blitz and we're going to take the check down and we're going to do that, or we're going to isolate the linebackers of Daniel Sorensen or Ben Neiman's out there. And then that's just how they dink and dunk down the field sometimes. So, I mean, the Chiefs, if they can find another defensive end that can create some pressure for them, or if they can get more out of their defensive tackle spot opposite Chris Jones in the pass rush, then, you know, then maybe they can change their fortunes. But right now, doesn't seem like Steve Spagnuolo and Brendan Daly have the answers with what they have on the roster.
Yeah, and I don't know if I don't know that Terrell Suggs is getting released and landing in the Chiefs lap.
I mean, technically,
happened last year. I'm just
technically
saying,
he's still on the market if they wanted to bring somebody like that in.
That's true, but I mean, last year he ended up being the solution late in the season when he got cut by the Ravens. So at this point, you got to hope.
Got cut by the Cardinals.
Ended up. So at this point, I don't know. I mean, you got to hope. Maybe the Chiefs can catch lightning in a bottle again, sometime in mid December. Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back, talk a little bit more in the C block. I have a couple more things I want to chat with you about. Yep. Some good, some bad. How's that?
Okay.
All right, we'll be back in 4th and 1.
The Chiefs continue their quest against the AFC West. Chiefs, Broncos, one of the NFL's most meaningful rivalries.
It's going to be loud, so we got to communicate.
On Sunday Night Football, get Kansas City's most exclusive coverage, interviews, analysis, the best pregame show in town.
Let's go, what? Let's go.
Next Sunday at 5.
Only on 41 Action News, your home of the world champion, Kansas City Chiefs.
The best seat to all the action. 7th Street Casino. Sunday Sound Off. An interactive sports show like no other. Answer questions. Voice your opinion. Try your hand against our panel of experts every Sunday night after the news and football.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, I kind of threw the name Terrell Suggs out there, but there was an interesting development this week when the Houston Texans, waived Kenny Stills. Any chance? I mean, he's subject to the NFL waiver wire. I'm not sure he gets all the way down to the Chiefs at 31, but is he a guy you'd kick the tires on if he were available?
Yeah, I'd put in a waiver claim for him, just because you don't know what Watkins is going to be able to stay healthy. I mean, you don't know where your situation is at. You know, if Robinson gets hurt or Mecole Hardman gets hurt, so. I'm not against bringing another weapon in here to be able to have them be that number five guy, especially with Pringle gone. Or maybe he becomes a number three over time. But, I mean, he could give you a nice little playoff push if you wanted to have him in there. Now, I mean, do I think he's going to get to the Chiefs at probably the 31st spot?
Yeah,
I think it's going to be tough, but I would definitely put in the claim if he can.
Yeah, I mean, you look at teams like the Eagles, the Browns, the Packers, who, you know, there are lots of teams that have been looking for wide receiver help at different times, and they're all going to be ahead of the Chiefs because it goes in reverse order your record for waiver claims this time of year. So the Chiefs would be 31, Steelers 32. I'm not convinced that he's going to get there, especially because he was only paid about $7 million this year, and three quarters of the season's already gone. So it wouldn't be real expensive to rent him down the stretch with a waiver claim.
Well, and I'm kind of curious, without really knowing the compensatory formula, I'm kind of curious if the team that takes on this contract, if they get the potential comp pick, and some of those general managers think about that type of stuff where they're like, oh, we'll just stash him for this time and get a comp pick for him because he was going to hit free agency next year.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, look, a lot was made. We talked about it too, about Brady's struggles throwing downfield. He was 0 for 22 on throws more than 20 yards down the field. Hit four of them against the Chiefs, a couple to Gronk, 31 yarder to Evans for a touchdown. Is that troublesome for the secondary? Obviously sometimes it was safety issues. Sometimes it was blown coverages in zone. Sometimes they were just picking on Ward or Sorensen, but how concerning is that?
That was actually one of the things in my game plan that I wanted him to test out against him. Just try to force him to take some of those throws. So I'm not upset that I think tactic-wise they allowed that to happen to some extent. You got to see if he can still make them or not. And he was able to make a couple of them, but hey, guess who won the football game?
Was it the Chiefs?
It was the Chiefs.
Nice.
Yes, it was the Chiefs.
I was really worried I was going to get that wrong.
You crushed it. Good job, you. Good job. But yeah, I mean, I'm not upset about it because I think there were some looks that they were giving him to try to force him to take some of those. And they were hoping that the blitz was going to get there a couple times and the front four pressure was going to get there a couple times as well. So it's just the way it works in concert sometimes that, I mean, hey, they forced him into a couple turnovers. And the one that kind of alarmed me, and I'll be curious to watch on the coach's film, was Gronk's big run out of play action. That's the one that I'm kind of curious about. Like, what happened in the coverage there where you left Gronk just wide open over the off the play action? That's the one I'm kind of curious about.
Yeah. I think that was the 48-yarder down the –
Because the first Evans TD that he got after Ward did a really good job on the play before and then didn't do as well that second time around as he thought he had safety help over top, and Amarni Watts just kind of stood there and watched Brady, and then we realized there was somebody behind him and turned and ran, then it wasn't going to work out well. So,
right.
I mean, that one I kind of understand because if you have a healthy Juan Thornhill that's back to full speed, that play that play's not going to happen. So – it's just kind of circumstance. And that's another spot that you're going to mark down the road here where you're like, hey, Chiefs may need to go invest in another safety.
Yeah. No, look, the Chiefs keep winning. We're picking at nits here, but, that's what Andy Reid and the team has to do so they can get better these last five games.
Correct.
The Chiefs have a 4-game lead in the division with 5 to go. I haven't run the math. They may be able to clinch. Certainly they'd be able to clinch if they win and the Raiders lose next week. But I think the Raiders are playing the Jets, so I'm not so sure that's going to happen. But, it's inevitable the Chiefs are going to be in the postseason.
I didn't think the Falcons was going to happen, and then that happened.
Right, but it's inevitable that the Chiefs will be in the playoffs. Now it's a matter of where are they going to be seated, what are the matchups going to be, and are they going to be playing their best football when they get to that stage of the run it back tour.
Yeah. All right. So to answer your question on the tiebreaker part, are you ready for it?
There you go. Yep.
Okay. So first one, even if they both finish hypothetically 11-5, best case scenario, they both finish 11-5. Chiefs beat the Broncos. They're 4-1 in the division. Division is the first thing you go to. So the Chiefs would have the upper hand in that. Then the
they'd be 4-2 because they'd have to lose to the Chargers to get to 11-5 there.
Yeah, with the Chiefs, yes. And then we'll see what the Chargers, what the Raiders do in that regard. So beat the Broncos, you're still in really good position with just the Chargers left. And then the second thing it goes to is, if I remember correctly, is conference record,
yep.
Which the Chiefs are 8-1 right now with only the Broncos, Dolphins, and I think the Chargers. Yeah, Chargers left in terms of conference. But the Raiders already have 3 losses in the conference. So. Yeah. If the Chiefs probably win two more of the AFC, then that's wrapped up in that regard. So the Chiefs are in great position tiebreaker wise. So just win two more and you lock down the division for sure.
Yeah, record fifth division title in a row, tying the Raiders of the 70s and the Peyton Manning era Broncos. So
heard of him.
Yeah, he was. I think he wasn't so bad at the quarterback thing either.
He wasn't, and he's up as a finalist for the Hall of Fame this year. He's
one of the... I would vote for him. I think I would vote for him. He would get my vote. I think we know somebody on the Hall of Fame selection committee. We should let him know.
I don't think that's going to be a hard presentation. Oh, I am kind of curious. Well, I'll have to ask him and some other people that are involved in it too. How are they going to do the voting process this year? Like, you know, whenever they're all in a room and everything and they analyze it together collectively at the Super Bowl, are they going to do like a really massive Zoom this year? They're probably going to have to do like a massive Zoom.
Yeah, I hope so. And I'm all kinds of disappointed, but I don't have time to go into why I'm so disappointed about some of those Zoom presentations not being available for the public to watch, because they would be awesome.
Yeah, I think people would enjoy seeing, and this is an idea if anybody from the NFL is watching, or the voting process or Pro Football Hall of Fame process, I think people would kind of be intrigued to see kind of how they, the presenters, how they do, how they put it out there, what type of charisma they do or don't have. And
yeah, right. Record it and let us judge them.
That would actually be I'd actually enjoy that more than the Pro Bowl game itself. So I should definitely think about that.
All right. Hey, you know what you should think about? Getting some rest so we can do another podcast later this week.
I'm off on Friday, so we're gonna have to work around my schedule.
All right, well, so it's just going to be 30 minutes of me talking.
Somebody may like that somewhere.
Thanks, Mom. All right. Hey, big win against the Buccaneers, 10-1. If somebody told you the Chiefs would be 10-1 at this point in the season, you'd take that all day, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm one off in the loss column right now, because I think I had them with three losses total for the year.
I think we both had them losing that Bills game. It was supposed to
be Thursday night. Well, if the Bills game had been on Thursday, who knows how that would have gone. Yeah. But luckily it wasn't, so that kind of worked out in their fate. But, yeah, no, I think I'm trying to think, because I had the Ravens, and I'm losing the Ravens, Bills, and then I can't remember.
I think it was Saints.
Yeah, I want to say Saints.
At the Saints.
Either Bucks or Saints, but I'm pretty sure it was the Saints, because I thought Drew Brees might get the better of them. But who knows if Drew Brees is going to be in that game with his 8 or 11 cracked ribs. I know the original report said 8, but then later it seemed like it turned to 11. So either way, that's not good when you're playing quarterback.
No, it's not. You know what is good when you're playing quarterback? Being 2-2 all time against Tommy Brady.
And did you see that? We put the full screen up. Did you see through the first 41 games, Mahomes just obliterates him in yardage and touchdowns?
Well, he does that everybody. I mean, now that he's got 1,500 career passes, he officially qualifies for the career leaderboards. He's got the most passing yards per game, the best touchdown interception ratio in NFL history. Like, he just blew Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and a bunch of other folks out of the record books, you know, when he threw, I believe, his 27th pass in the game against the Bucks on Sunday. So
I look forward to the challenge of seeing where things go.
Yeah, right. So, all right, hey, take care, kids. Hope you had a happy Thanksgiving, and welcome to December, man. We're almost through with 2020.
That makes me scared for what's ahead in 2021. I know people keep saying their tagline is, hey, 2020 is almost over, 2021 is gonna be better, and I'm like, man, I don't know. I mean, are we on one of those things where it's kind of the downslope of some things? I mean, I don't know. And yeah. I'm not getting into anything, you know, in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying, like, it's, you know, it's like those Chiefs games I used to get hyped for, and like, you know, I'm like, hey, this game they're gonna dominate them, and then they just get shell shocked. So I've always kind of learned in life, if you always expect the rug to be swept out from under you, you never get disappointed. Remember, Todd, paranoia equals prepared.
Right. In the immortal words of Buddy Bell, I never say it can't get worse.
Oh, I like that for a t-shirt.
There you go. All right. Take care, kids. Have a good week.